SNL hosted by Russell Crowe is over, but we are just getting started here on the SNL post-show recap here on postshowrecaps.com. And now here are the two guys who are looking for you to bear us a son. I'm Rob Sisson. Here's Rich Tacker. Rich, how are you?
I am good. You know, Rob, as I always say about SNL, you win some and I think this week for me was a little bit more of the second column. I think this is going to be a fun discussion. I always love SNL. I think we're going to be discussing a lot of sort of what happened. And if you, I will say up front, if you did like this episode, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I disagree with you, but I love that you're part of the conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, good stuff. We are here for our weekly SNL recap here on postshowrecaps.com. We're going to talk through all of the sketches here tonight. And then James Keast will join us to talk about the music later on in the show in the order that the sketches appear. And so, Rich, before we get into the cold open, what do you want to say about Russell Crowe hosting SNL?
This was a weird one. Now, you know, I'll be very straightforward. For me, this one didn't work. A lot didn't work. And of course, some stuff did. I mean, no one's going to bat zero. There's some fun stuff here. You know, I will. And why did it not work? We don't know. We don't know what happened. But I will say a lot of odd things that at least you can point to and say, OK, this is different than a regular SNL. A couple of things. Russell Crowe, the host, was only in four sketches. That's sort of unheard of. Someone on postshowrecaps.com, I can't bring up the page because I don't want to get feedback, brought up, like, asked the question, did Russell Crowe show up late to the rehearsals? And it was a really great point because he was also in no pre-tapes, which I've never seen before. I don't think I've ever seen a host not be in any of the pre-tapes, at least not this year. And the other thing, it was interesting, thinking back about the Dinklage episode, when we talked about a series actor not known for comedy, especially one who's never hosted SNL before, the thing that Dinklage did really right is that for the most part he was the straight person, and the way that he did comedy on SNL is he reacted as seriously as he would on Game of Thrones to ridiculous situations, and that made the comedy. Here we had Russell Crowe, who I am going to guess asked for, requested, or something to be the wacky person in almost every sketch. And I thought that was a miss on a lot of fronts here. I would love to have seen Russell Crowe be the straight man and let someone else be the wacky character. And I think we could have had a lot more fun with this episode.
Now, the movie that he has coming up with Ryan Gosling, is that a comedy?
Yes, I think it's a dark comedy, but it is a comedy.
So do you feel like, is the difference there, where is Russell Crowe going on SNL to show people he's funny, whereas Peter Dinklage is going on SNL because Game of Thrones is coming back and he's not necessarily promoting a comedy? Even though it looks like he is in that Melissa McCarthy movie that's coming out.
Yeah, I think that with dramatic actors coming on, I do think sometimes, they see John Hamm come on, they see Alec Baldwin come on for the first time and think, oh, maybe I could do that. And I think it's tough because when you see the trailer for The Good Guys, he's clearly doing exactly what I just said, which is he's letting other people be highly ridiculous, and then he's acting as if that could really happen and playing it straight, which makes him a good straight man. So, certainly it could be a situation where, they just wrote this kind of stuff for him, or he sort of kindly asked for it and the cast was sort of game for it. But I suspect not. I suspect that this was him. I don't want to say, I don't know if it's hubris. I don't know if it's fun, but whatever. But I think that he sort of made the call of, I want to do this because I think I can. I think I can be funny. And we'll discuss with interesting results what I thought.
Okay. All right. Let's get into the monologue, which is Hillary Clinton. She has been campaigning in New York, like many of the presidential candidates. We've seen them do all sorts of wacky things to try to pander to the New York voters. And here was Kate McKinnon as Hillary, delivering sort of a solo monologue about where Hillary stands and how she feels about Bernie Sanders potentially catching up on her.
Yeah, I thought this was a good, solid cold open. I don't think it was the best that we've seen, but I thought certainly this was fairly solid. This is the first time we've seen just a Hillary Clinton direct address monologue this season, which we know we had seen a couple of these this early on. So I thought it was fun. You know, I will say for me, I like when they play Hillary as the determined woman who's going to win at all costs. She's super smart. She's super driven. So I like the bits, the sort of when we're talking about New Yorkers, you know, the idea of having sort of the Yankees hat that at a certain time she turns to be a New York hat. I would say for me, what I didn't like, what doesn't fit this character is the person who hasn't done enough homework that she calls the New York the fat apple, or that she calls them the New York meats. I felt like, well, you know, that's the Al Sharpton character we're going to see. I felt like, and this is nitpicky, but I thought, you know, I thought this is where the character is inconsistent and we don't need that here. I would rather see her be the woman trying to get over the subway turnstile. And she's so dedicated that we're going to get a really nice piece of comedy from Kate McKinnon here instead of, you know, something as silly as pretending to eat a hot dog when it's so obvious that she's not. So, but overall, I thought this was really funny, and I really liked the Game of Thrones reference. I thought this was a funnier Game of Thrones reference than most of last week's with the three-eyed raven. And if you don't vote for Hillary, winter is coming. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah. And as far as live from New York at Saturday Night Live,
she brings it every time she brings it. I was very happy with that. It's great, great energy, great way to start the show.
Okay. All right. So then, speaking of what a way to start the show, let's talk about Russell Crowe and the monologue where Russell Crowe, maybe almost like a microcosm of what you're saying, where he's standing up there telling us, see, I'm funny. See, I've done comedy before. I know what I'm doing. And so you can see in my movies, here are all the funny things that I've done in my comedy movies.
Yeah, this was a tough one for me. I mean, I will say it was mercifully and oddly short. This was a monologue that was 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Also, what I thought was notable that I think sort of played into a little bit of the rest of the episode is that he did not interact with any cast member, either planted in the audience or as walk-ons. He did it purely as a monologue, which we almost never see unless it's a stand-up doing material. You know, some funny jokes here and there. I like that it was short. The Beautiful Mind's boobs joke did make me laugh. I'm 11.
Is that real?
I accept it. I don't know. I actually wondered, watching it a second time, I wondered if that was real or if they added that just for it. But either way, it was a funny joke. But I was a little, you know, again, once we set up the first joke with Gladiator, we kind of see it multiple times. You know, him sort of quote unquote making fun of himself in Les Mis. I thought, okay, he's not really making fun of himself. He's creating the illusion of he's making fun of himself from Les Mis, but he didn't actually make fun of himself. But you know what? In and out, and sometimes with the monologue, that's the most I can ask.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot to talk about here with the Russell Crowe monologue. You know, I thought this was really wild that we went into a pre-taped and then another sketch right after the monologue. That I feel like that is exceptionally rare in SNL, right?
Yeah, this was a rare one. And again, we're not seeing Russell Crowe in the pre-tape, which was rare. And then we'll talk about the live sketch afterwards. But the whole timing of the way everything went down makes me think that something happened, either Russell wasn't connecting with material. A lot of stuff got thrown out at dress rehearsal. Orders were swapped around last minute. A lot of strange stuff going on here.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the Preparation H Advanced Drill. You know, we talk a lot about how we have Leslie Jones is always playing Leslie Jones. That I do feel like that there's a thing where Beck Bennett is always playing this character.
Yeah, this character basically could be taken out of the penis rap pre-taped from the Ronda Rousey, where everyone's rapping about how large their penis is, and he's talking about how it's not. It felt very much sort of a piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like the Beck Bennett character is the character who cannot keep quiet about cannot keep quiet about a very embarrassing ailment that he suffers from. and is very loud in a public place about this very embarrassing thing that's happening to him.
Yes, I definitely agree. It's definitely the he plays the I'm the nice guy, regular guy who, in fact, turns out to slowly unhinge over the course of a pre-tape sketch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You know, this was so we see Preparation H Advanced Gel. You know, the setup is pretty much, you know, we see Taryn has a problem with his, you know, in a social engagement at a dinner. And then he's rescued by Beck Bennett, who gives him Preparation H, which is great win. Everyone's happy until during the dinner, Beck Bennett interrupts to sort of ask him how his ass is feeling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and sort of the ongoing gag of the sketch is that, you know, Beck Bennett keeps interrupting him with this horribly embarrassing reminder that he had a problem with his butt, you know. And I think, you know, I want to hear what you think. For me, again, I hate to give this an boy, but I got to go full out boy on this. And the reason is I feel like this is a comedic premise that doesn't actually work, in that I don't think in 2016 people having hemorrhoids is such an unbelievable, embarrassing thing that if it were to be brought up in a social setting, it would be this unbelievably horrible thing. So mm-hmm. it was hard to buy, like, okay, nobody likes it and whatever. But in 2016, with a bunch of people in their young 20s, if someone said I had a hemorrhoid, other than if you're eating food, I think we're sort of asked to buy that Beck's character saying, oh my God, how's your ass doing, is going to sort of unhinge, to go back to this, you know, Taryn's character, which I just don't think worked. And I think that watching it, while we're not supposed to be comedy police, I think that's why I had no stakes. It was a false jeopardy that I didn't feel like if this happened to me, I would be mortified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty fair point. I also felt like that, you know, it did not really continue to build also from the point where, you know, it sort of had been revealed that, hey, did you use that? You know, I feel like you got a pop out of the first time when, you know, Beck Bennett comes back and says, hey, did you use that cream that I gave you? And then after that, it really, I feel like the stakes do not get much greater than that.
Yeah. I mean, all we really see after this is that it's just then we see Beck's character start to unravel and find out that he's putting cream on in the bathroom with his legs over his head, and a woman walked in, and there were some definite chuckles. But I think it was all a little bit like, you know, as others have said, you know, we've seen the hands-free selfie stick and the, you know, a lot of the fake cocaine and the fake, you know, poop for the fake cocaine. And I feel like we're just sort of playing a lot of these beats when these false commercials is like, you know, I enjoy better.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Politics Nation with Al Sharpton. And here's Keenan doing his Al Sharpton impression. It's been a while since we've seen Politics Nation, and it turns out it's all a big setup for the real Al Sharpton to show up here on SNL. And we do have a bit of the SNL trope where the person playing themselves is like interacting with the person who's doing the character of them, and they have a couple of jabs back and forth about Al Sharpton. So first of all, let's just deal with this in two parts. Let's talk about the pre-Al Sharpton part of this.
So, I mean, you know, Keenan can sometimes get on my nerves a little bit. I have no affinity or dislike of Al Sharpton. This sketch, as we've seen many times, is just the same beat over and over again. It's Al Sharpton, you know, misreading words on a teleprompter. So on paper, there is no reason for me to like this sketch. Mm-hmm. And yet, it makes me laugh every time. He does it so well, the misreading of the cue cards, that it really, I find this funny. And there were a lot of really funny, you know, we're sort of even starting out, we're talking about the voter ID, and he says the real purpose is to disenfranchise people. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yep, I like that. That just makes me laugh every time. Yeah. That said, I don't know why the bit with the Sasheer Zameda didn't work for me. You know, her name is Christy, but he calls her Christy, a little bit back and forth. She has a joke that kind of, no fault to her own, I feel like just sort of died to the point where the audience didn't even know to laugh. And I felt it was a little bit awkward, but in general it was fun. It was, and I think,
well, she wasn't even on the show last week.
Yeah, no, there was a couple of, Jay Farrow, I don't think was on the show this week. No. I don't even know if he was in the building. Actually,
I saw him in the credits and I was like, oh, there's Jay Farrow. I forgot about him.
Yeah, very odd that even they had Michael Che you know, in the last pre-tape and not Jay Farrow, which was odd. But that aside,
yeah, he was out drinking with Russell Crowe all week.
Probably, yeah. So that was a little bit of a weird tone. I don't quite know what Sears felt like. I didn't quite get the rhythm of this, trying to be the straight person. But he's so funny. Keenan really makes me laugh in this.
You're such a Keenan super fan now.
Isn't it crazy? And like nothing has changed. If you put Willie on, I'm gonna lose my brain. But when it works, it works. And this works. This character for me definitely works.
Okay. So then Al Sharpton shows up and he gives the, I forget what the name of the stat was.
Charlie Richard. Oh, the black group, approval rating or something.
Rating, sure. And so he's going through all of the political candidates. First of all, what is the timing for Al Sharpton? In all these years, I feel like I don't recall Al Sharpton appearing on the show in this sketch. It's not like it's a popular sketch that we do a lot. Here's Al Sharpton.
No, the thing I wonder, and I think someone on PostShowRecaps.com said this, and I asked, so I'm going to see if I can quickly find it, but I probably can't, is I did wonder, like, is it because Keenan is maybe thinking about wrapping it up this season? And is this, you know, we'll only have probably four more episodes before the season finale. So I did wonder if this was just a nod to Keenan leaving. Al Sharpton, no stranger to the show, but hasn't been on this. I thought it was just a like court of time to like, oh, it'll be fun to have him on here. I thought he got a very nice round of applause, but I felt like it was warm, but I think a good percentage of the audience was like, wait, who's that? Is that? Oh, and then after that, that's Al Sharpton, because we're not used to seeing Al Sharpton, especially the thin Al Sharpton, because we've been staring at Keenan as SNL fans for so long.
Yeah. What'd you think about? I really thought that they broke the fourth wall where they went back and forth, where it was like Al Sharpton's like, well, you know, I'm surprised, Al, that you look so heavy. And then Keenan like really made a big deal out of like, well, a lot of people say I look younger. And but he did like almost like a wink and like a kick, like
literally winked at the camera. He literally winked at the camera, which I've never seen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is a premise that Keenan as Al Sharpton has hit on this, you know, when we've seen this sketch prior, he's talked about like, you know, the camera adding, you know, 50 pounds and other jokes about how he looks much heavier than you. So it's not a new thing. I guess if you're going to bring the real Al Sharpton on, it's a joke. It's something that he's going to want to address in a fun way. So yeah, it was silly. It was completely, you're right, it was completely out of the sketch at a certain point. But I thought, you know what, we don't need to buy this sketch. We're just watching a comedian be funny. So it didn't bother me as much as normally it would.
Okay. Anything in terms of Al Sharpton's delivery of the jokes?
I thought he did good. I mean, I thought there were a couple of fun. I mean, I think that I like that he let Keenan be. I love that. It's so dumb. But when they're talking about the metrics and Keenan refers to it as the algorithm, I thought that was hilarious. And then Sharpton did a nice, he said the algorithm, and he didn't try to get a laugh on it. He just was the straight person correcting and then moved on. I like the, you know, the sort of when they're talking about when they were talking about Trump and they're like, come on now, that little run back and forth was cute. It was more fun than funny, but mm-hmm. Obviously he was a very willing participant. It was fun, and I will say they didn't go too long on it, which I appreciated.
Okay, let's talk about Henry VIII, where the holographic simulation of Henry VIII is activated at a museum where people can interact with the Russell Crowe Henry VIII. Rich, what's your take on this?
Well, I was reprogramming the hologram to just continually say, oh boy, this was a traffic accident. This was a rough one. Now, this is, you know, weird. Again, this is a whole weird situation because, I don't know what this was. You know, comedically, take out Russell Crowe for a second. The gag is, for all that the real Henry VIII would have to say about his life, he would be so upset that he was never, he never had a son, that to every woman, he's just going to say, bear me a son. Okay, we get it. We saw it. doesn't get as big a laugh as maybe they thought it was going to get, but that happens. So where do we go next? Well, apparently we just keep rerunning that over and over again. So I think the hologram technology was on a loop because it just kept going over and over, never getting funnier. A couple of titters here and there, wow. but for me, it was, this was rough.
Yeah. Visually impressive though, right? In terms of the effects.
Yeah, obviously he was on another stage and they did a nice job. Patrick and Sadie are both saying that they liked it. They disagree with me and that they liked it, and that's great. You know what? That's the thing about comedy, is if you did like it, that's fantastic. This was even the timing of, like, you know, talking about how much I really liked Keenan, this episode, there was a way he comes on to, like, oh, what is this? And it's like, oh, it's a, basically he's Henry VIII has never seen a black person. But even the rhythm and the timing of it was so off when Keenan was like, I'm out. It was like a full beat too late. And maybe it's because Russell Crowe is on another soundstage and they can't physically see each other, or maybe I don't know what. But a lot of that was just like, oh, just go. A.D. Bryant, very game sort of towards the end, but this was tough.
Okay, well, let's not spend too much more time on Henry VIII. Let's talk about the game show here, Match Finders. And again, here's Keenan. He's firmly entrenched as the resident game show host and does a nice job here as the host of this dating game, where Cecily Strong is just, some woman who is interviewing these three people. It really is almost like the dating game format requires three. But I really felt like that Pete Davidson was a real vestigial Pete Davidson here in this scene. And they even skipped him like a couple times in the script. Like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, when he was like, I yield my time to the gentleman with the ponytail. I liked Pete in this sketch. I will say, before we get to Russell Crowe, so a couple of weird things. It's now midnight and it's the first time we're seeing Russell Crowe act in a live sketch with other actors at the same time. Mm-hmm. Politics Nation was the first sketch in months that we actually did had a live sketch between the monologue and a Weekend Update where the host was not in. So it's very rare. So obviously something's weird. So going to this sketch specifically, there was some funny stuff to it. Again, here was the problem that I thought they were trying to fit. I'm trying to use a term that's not going to come out in an appropriate comment, but a square peg in a round hole, in that they're trying to do a game show format of dating, which doesn't exist anymore. This show doesn't exist. GSN wouldn't air a show like this at all. Like, it was a very odd, I know they had Baggage, but it was a real weird, like, I don't know what we're watching. So I think before we get to the unusual character, which is going to be our third bachelor, it was like, I thought that Keenan was kind of funny. I like those sort of dead-eyed Cecily Strong. But it all felt like, again, I don't know what I'm watching. So I know that I'm watching is a sketch about a dating game show, not I'm watching a dating game show. So I thought this was hard going into it. And then once again, Russell Crowe feels the need or whatever to be the funny one in the sketch. And it was an interesting one. I would say I wouldn't give it an boy, but it really was just relying on language that was really pushing the boundaries of broadcast television.
Yeah. Well, it was certainly a surprise the first time around. Again, it was one joke. Now,
yeah, I like the idea that he would, I won't say, he's talking about how he would mount a subtle but focused campaign on her body part, and I was like, oh my God. And then we're just going to sort of hit this over and over again. I would say, my opinion is, if I had to trim the sketch, I would have gotten rid of the Beck Bennett character, because I thought we've just seen him 1,000 times. I thought at least the Pete Davidson character, starting out being an absolute stereotype and then at a certain point, like, you're my hero, I thought was very funny. So, so there were things about it that were fun. As much as I like Keenan, I don't know that his character, it was a really kind of, the character was all over the place. place in this one for me.
I liked him. I thought he was, I liked his ponytail reveal. I liked he's like, oh, you're just walking into traffic.
Yes, that was very funny. That was very funny. But a lot of this was just, again, like he, you know, the character has a ponytail, but we never see the ponytail except for sort of in the background. And Russell Crowe has a pipe, but it's not lit, so he's smoking an unlit pipe, which just feels like we're doing a skit in high school. Like it just felt so like, is that the character choice we're supposed to buy? Or it just felt like, it felt like he grabbed a prop on the way out to the set and like, oh no, my character should be smoking a pipe, and then just so it just felt a little slapped together, I thought. But the, you know, by the time we get to the point where he realizes that he's going to get cancer, some of the lines were absolutely funny, and Keenan's reaction was funny.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk about the musical guest for this week. All right, let's get James here. James Keese, of course, the editor of Exclaim magazine. James, how are you?
Well, guys, how are you?
Very good. You ready to talk some country? Good.
Country. It was the Grand Ole Opry on SNL this week.
Yes. All right.
Yes.
What did you think?
SNL very rarely goes country at all, and they very rarely go this country. This was some full-on pedal steel, honky-tonk, long dresses, Loretta Lynn country. Margot Price, who's a sort of a stalwart of the Nashville scene. She's this is sort of her coming out party, I guess, this year. She's just put out her first record, but she's been in the scene for a while. She's in her early 30s. And it's Jack White who is behind this. He's signed her to his record label. So Jack White, a known traditionalist and fan of antiques, both musically and in terms of furniture. Margot Price is his latest, and Jack produced Loretta Lynn's comeback record a couple years ago, and Margot Price is fully in that wheelhouse. Hurtin' on the Bottle is the first song, and I was thinking, because I am a fan of this kind of music, and I always have a place in my heart for it, but I was thinking, exactly what I love about it is probably exactly what people who hate it hate about it. The reasons both to love it and to hate it are the same, I think. And either you're in or you're out. So, which is why I think it makes for an interesting choice. Usually Saturday Night Live tries to book something that will be more appealing to a broader range of tastes. For the second song, Since You Put Me Down, we got a change of dress, but not a change of style. One could argue that lyrically we get into a kind of a honky-tonk Mad Lib situation here, where you sort of wonder, at what point is a 32-year-old woman in 2016 writing about this as actual authentic experience that she's had, or whether this is just... you write this kind of country song because this is the kind of country song that you write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's some of that here that is maybe not present in somebody like Taylor Swift, who I think is very much writing from her perspective as a woman of this age. Margot Price seems to be writing of a woman, writing as a woman of 1972. I think that woman might actually be Loretta Lynn.
Yeah. Is there a lyric in question, or is it just the song in general?
There were just so many, drinking on my mind, and the, just every country cliche of, you know, the porch and the whiskey and the old dog and the cowboy coming home. And it would just seem like it seemed like more, a pile of of what you would expect to hear from a song that sounded like this than anything that a woman, you know, born in 1983 had experienced in her life.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
I will say that I liked it. I mean, as much as I'm not a big country fan, this is probably on the edge of country for me. But and maybe if she had shown up during a great episode like the Larry David episode, I might have not been so desperate to cleave to something that kept my attention for more than 30 seconds. But I liked it. Although I will say, if I get to do another fantasy football team next year, I will probably call myself the Hunky Tonk Mad Libs.
I don't mean to say that I don't like her, but I think she's doing a very specific thing that serves a very specific market. And I think that can be a turnoff for some people if you're not, you know, already in the wheelhouse. If you're not already a fan of George Jones, you're probably not going to be sold on Margo Price.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right. So next week, a Jonas Brothers sighting.
One of the Joni.
Yes. Which one? Nick Jonas or is it Kevin Jonas?
I think it's Nick.
Nick.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how many of them are still alive or what they're doing.
I think they're all still alive. I haven't heard anything.
the Joni are all okay.
It's not Joe Jonas, right?
I don't think it's Joe.
Okay. All right. So one of the Jonas Brothers there with Julia Louis-Dreyfus next week on the podcast. All right, James, great stuff. You can follow James on Twitter. He is at Exclaim Editor. Thank you so much, James.
Thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Okay.
All right, Rich, let's talk about weekend update. Let's get into where Colin Jost and Michael Che have left off.
Yeah, I felt like this was bizarre a weekend update in that I felt like Colin and Michael brought it totally this week. And the correspondence that I normally love, including some of the people that I really like, I thought just ate it. It was really a tough one on that. Yeah, literally in this case, ate it. So, but starting with Michael and Colin, I thought they did a really good job. I thought a lot of funny jokes. I like, Colin did a nice run sort of at the top. Michael did a nice run. Michael did a nice run later on in the, about Bill Clinton having to support his wife. I thought a couple of the jokes were good. I like Colin's, sort of run about, Ted Cruz and like, we don't need you New Yorkers. And then when he said, you're not a real New Yorker till you come home into your apartment and find a rat masturbating on your couch. Mm-hmm. Like that, like just a lot of little fun runs, good energy. I felt like Che was bringing it up. They were sort of on the same energy sort of frequency to each other, which felt really good. So again, maybe my barometer was a little low from the first 40 minutes of the show, but I really enjoyed the two of them. I thought this was just for them, even though maybe they have had funnier individual jokes in prior episode, that all in all, this was probably their best outing of the year.
Yeah, Michael Che was also really good during the Hillary Clinton subway rant.
Yes. I don't want to vote for someone who rides the subways and that whole, unless you want to stick it. Was it stepping something sticky and wonder, is that urine or Snapple?
Right.
It was really, so a lot of good stuff there. I really liked it.
All right. Well, let's talk about the visitors to the update desk. And it was the return of, I believe, Deanie.
Yeah, I think the first time she was called Dee Dee. I actually wonder if, and I couldn't tell watching it a second time, if Colin was saying Dee Dee or Deanie. The graphic said Deanie, but I wondered if it was a typo because last time she was Dee Dee. So who knows? But the name was not saving it. We had first seen this character back in December with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, and I think that there was some funny stuff about it. I remembered that when we saw it the first time, I liked the fact that through her monologue, she was very subtly eating baked salmon out of a Tupperware. Mm-hmm. And as often happens with Weekend Update, if something works a little, let's do it 100 times bigger to see if it's 100 times funnier. So her eating the Tupperware kind of became the joke, which didn't make any sense because someone's mom, Dee Dee, doesn't eat Brussels sprouts like that. So it was a very, very weird thing
that the only thing we said, really, it wasn't funny. I said, I guess that there was like the biggest jokes would like came out of what she was eating. So I think it's just like, all right, let's get her back out there eating some more.
Yeah. And normally I think Kate is very good at sort of like knowing when, as big as her characters can be, knowing what to do subtle. And this, I don't know if she was just eating it. So she thought, I'm going to try to make a joke out of eating it, literally, as we said. And again, we've talked about this last time, the whole idea that, she's really just watching soap operas doesn't feel it doesn't feel it feels like this is written by a 45-year-old whose mom used to watch soap operas, but not it. This doesn't feel like a 23-year-old's mom would watch soap operas. So it's all that, you know, that again, she doesn't know anyone's name. We got to the OJ. I loved People versus OJ. Me and my wife loved every episode. So it was fun to get a little
not
bit about
People versus BJ Simpson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But when she's talking about how Show Me the Money does this one thing, and then Skunk Hair from Friends kept bringing up the Jews, and they had the correct and always bringing up juice. So that I thought was that was a nice bright spot. But I think I think we can retire Deanie. I think I don't know that we need to see her again.
OK. And then, boy, it's the return of Bruce Channeling. And I don't know who is looking for Bruce Channeling on the Weekend Update desk. I have been told that, oh, you just don't get the good neighbor sensibility here. But I don't know who's getting Bruce Channeling. I mean, I think that that he has now replaced a number of different Fred Armisen characters as even I would take Willie, I think, at this point over Bruce Channeling again.
Yeah. The question is, would I take Nicholas Fane over Bruce yes. Channeling? That's a tough one. I don't know.
Just for the nostalgia.
Yeah. You know, and I think, of course, I agree with you. I think the first time we saw Bruce Channeling, I thought it's not for me, but I have to admire the performance that he's willing to go out, tell bad jokes, ultimately get to this dark, sad place, and then bring it back again, and then got the audience applauding. But it's the same thing every time. It's not interesting. It's not fun. Michael Che's reaction to him was almost too harsh for comedy. So it was just like, it just felt like a repeat. It felt literally just like a repeat. I didn't need to see it. Yes, this was, he does a good performance. We just saw it in November. It wasn't that long ago on the Elizabeth Thanks episode. And the fact that we're going from this right out to the close of Weekend Update without even a Weekend Update joke in between, I thought was a rough way to end.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know what the appeal is. Who's saying that they enjoy this? Let us know in the comments if you're one of the people that are really enjoying Bruce Channeling. But I think it's time to put it to bed. All right, let's get into. I got a lot of comments about this, Rich. 100 Days in the Jungle, a Survivor parody.
Well, I'm going to leave most of this to you. I'll say two things up front. I have a comment, a question.
It's not and boy, is it?
What?
It's not and boy, is it?
You know. Kind of. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the worst of the Russell Crowe sketches. But again, it was like, you know, for me, this coming out of this, it was immediately like after everything we've seen, why couldn't Russell Crowe have played one of the straight, you know, one of the contestants in this or play the host and let someone else be a wacky character? I didn't get it. It was odd to me. We didn't need it. That said, I really enjoyed Pete Davidson. I thought Pete Davidson did a very nice job as a straight person, which we don't often see. He did a really good job. And the question that I want to kick to you before we really even go into it is, I don't know why this wasn't just a Survivor sketch. Why did we have to call this 100 Days in the Jungle instead of just making whoever it was, Beck Bennett, I guess, just make him Jeff Probst and do a straight out Survivor piece?
It's a great point. I thought of it myself. I don't know why they had to work so hard to make it a Survivor like, I mean, down to the logo is almost like a recalculation of or like some sort of a reasonable facsimile. But yet when we do Bachelor, they don't call it Bachelor. They, you know, Farm Hunk has been the precedent. So for whatever reason, it seems like that they are just, you know, because maybe if they're not mocking exact like you, yet they did Naked and Afraid last week. So I don't really understand what the rules are in terms of this.
Yeah, and they have done The Bachelor before. We did The Bachelor, then we did Farm Hunk and but it very odd. And, you know, we've done The Voice, you know, we've done different shows. We've done Undercover Boss on a space station in Star Wars.
Which is also CBS, right?
Yeah, so all very odd. And I mean, and you're right, the detail, obviously the prop department was big. So, you know, Survivor, even the buffs on the arms were
were very, like, very clean for 94 Days in the Jungle. Those were spotless buffs, Rich. I felt like that they really did drop the ball in terms of very bright, clean yellow buffs.
Yes, I did. I saw in postshowrecaps.com, Sousa Susie had said, like, how old is this that we're doing a TV product placement? Feels like Survivor from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a little behind the curve. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know who the Survivor fans on the SNL writing staff are. That would be good to know. You don't know who wrote this sketch, do you?
No, I don't. I don't know.
Yeah. Bobby Moynihan, we know that he does watch Survivor and Big Brother. I'm not sure if there are who exactly are the writers there, or if they're just going off a sort of sense memory with this sort of, like, you know, if you watched Survivor 15 years ago, I mean, Loved One's Visit is still the same sort of idea. So we had to do a sketch around the fact that Russell Crowe is Pete Davidson's loved one, and, you know, shades of Johnny Fairplay, where, oh, my loved one is supposed to be this person, but it turns out to be this person, but it's a guy who he barely knows.
Right. It's his uncle's friend, Terry, which is very odd. Yeah. You know, this felt to me less like a parody of Survivor and more of an excuse to do yet another character piece for Russell Crowe, which I think was a miss. But that said, I did like Pete Davidson as the straight man. And I like the little touches of, like, where are my parents? And the Jeff Probst character is like, they had a thing. And then even when he's like, you're surprised I have seven brothers and sisters and a girlfriend of 3 years, like, little moments of that I thought was really, really cute. I didn't need the friend Terry. The food challenge was very, as soon as they wheel out the food challenge, before they get to the first one, I know what the joke is going to be. It's super obvious.
But the joke is a backwards joke, that Pete Davidson's reaction is bogus. If you were on Survivor, if you were in that situation and your loved ones had to eat something gross to win a reward, your uncle's friend Terry eating a duck's genitals like it's nothing would be a good thing for you. You would be excited then that your uncle's friend Terry was there.
Yes. So, this was another tough one.
So, okay. And then Terry gets the call from Leslie Jones. You get to see the video. That was kind of funny. All right.
That was cute. I liked that a lot. Yes.
Let's talk about Pogi Pepperoni. And this is seemingly another Good Neighbor sketch. I think that this was, if I had to pick my favorite Kyle Mooney piece of the night, this is it by far.
Yeah, I will say for me, the first time around, Jen and I were definitely sort of just like, what is this? What are we watching? I don't get what? Having then seen it and watching it a second time, I definitely appreciated the characters. I appreciated that these are characters we haven't seen before, and yet characters that were totally relatable, a very specific kind of nerd, a very specific fun. So I didn't love it, but I will appreciate the novelness of it and what they brought to it.
What was the name of Kyle Mooney's character?
Oh, I don't even remember. It was a weird AC something or
something like that.
Yeah.
That was fun. I mean, the game I thought was pretty clean in terms of their reactions to stuff, and then their heads explode at the end. So I thought this was very fun and cute, even though I was not dying and my head was not exploding.
Yeah. Okay. It, good on them.
All right. What about Leslie Jones as a ninja?
You know, I think a lot of people liked this. A lot of people thought this was a great sketch. Explain it to me. I don't know. I liked it when I saw it when it was first called Beverly Hills Ninja with Chris Farley. It was sort of just a sight gag premise that a non-physically fit larger person is a ninja and yet is still completely effective. I hoped that this would play funnier the second time I watched it. It did not. Mm-hmm. Vanessa Bayer had me giggling a couple of times, and a couple of things did make me laugh. So I wouldn't say a boy, but I would say, right on the verge for me. This was another, I actually hope we don't see Shanice again. I suspect that we will.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I have nothing to add on the Leslie Jones ninja. I didn't really get it.
As dumb as it was, I will say the fact that at the end they took it to the point where she's setting up a ladder behind Russell Crowe's back did make me giggle. I did like that was sort of where they took it. And again, why does Russell Crowe have to be a Russian mafia? Why can't he just be a bad guy? What, like, it's like, again, you don't have to be the big character in every scene.
When you have one of the great improvisational character actors of all time in Russell Crowe, You don't waste Russell Crowe.
Right, right. And hey, the big save of the scene was not that Leslie Jones saved Vanessa Bayh's character. It's that Kenan Thompson didn't choke to death on stage because it looked like he was not doing well there for a second.
Yeah. All right. Then the last sketch of the night is the Oprah Winfrey sketch. Now, this is very similar to that we saw Mike O'Brien do a playing Jay-Z in a sort of biopic. Here he is playing Oprah in a biopic. First Mike O'Brien thing that we've seen in a while, right?
Yeah, Mike O'Brien's off the show. So Mike O'Brien comes back and does these. I think he may even actually film these in L.A. We saw Jason Sudeikis back again. He was in the Jay-Z story was from the J.T. Simmons episode last year. So good to see him back. To me, the Jay-Z story was just good, dumb fun. It was pointless and it was hilarious. I thought that this was cute. If I had never seen the Jay-Z story, I'd still be talking about this. I felt like this just didn't have that extra spark that this one, because I felt like in the Jay-Z story, he played Jay-Z as the absolute whitest, nerdiest guy. Hey, let's make some rap. And here he played Oprah as just a regular guy, just a very straightforward, non-plussed white guy. So I kind of felt like really just watching a biopic trailer with a white guy in a dress. So I liked it, but I wish I liked it. I like the Mike O'Brien pieces a lot. So I'm sort of being nitpicky just because I like him a lot. The only time it really sort of got any heat for me was when he's explaining that he's going to launch Oprah Magazine. And he's like, no, I'm going to be on the cover. No, every time. No, as long as you can think in the future, it'll be me on the corner. So a lot of that stuff worked. The rest of it, I just thought it was just sort of find and replace. It was sort of a Microsoft Word version of a sketch. Like, let's just find and replace the real Oprah for a white guy in a dress. And I don't know that we got a lot out of it. But that said, it was a nice, at least I was laughing at something before the night was over.
Yeah, I think that the game also gets a little muddy where it's like sometimes like, okay, so Mike O'Brien is playing Oprah. And just like in the Jay-Z thing, it was that they had basically every time they talked to another famous rapper, it was another sort of like Mike O'Brien type person playing that other rapper, which was funny. Right. But here we have a lot of celebrities here, like where we have Tom Cruise, where it's almost like we're using like somebody who's supposed to be Tom Cruise. And I feel like that's also confusing.
Yeah, it wasn't as sort of inspired in its overall silliness,
and it was long.
And I actually do wonder, I have no knowledge, I do wonder if this was something that Mike O'Brien had just made and it has been perennially in the can for a moment of, oh, we are short this week, because again, Russell Crowe is not in it, so you really do wonder.
We're short was 6 this, minutes.
Yeah. And so for an evening where the star has only been in four of the sketches and potentially we're going to something that was made a few weeks ago, maybe it wasn't. But I do wonder if something was going on behind the scenes with Russell Crowe as our host that we don't know about.
OK. All right, Rich, let's talk about the good nights. You could tell when you watched this, was there any sort of wonkiness going on between Russell Crowe and the cast?
I mean, huge moat between him and Margot and the rest of the cast. At the end, he then walked around and was thanking everybody. I would say everybody seemed, Leslie Jones, of course, she loves everybody and she's obviously very social. So she was really nice. I thought everybody had a like Bobby and Taryn and everybody had a like, hey, man, great job, but nobody was going up to him. So if I had to sort of put my spidey sense on, I do wonder, I would doubt that it was like they didn't like him, but I don't think that there was the same reaction as Peter Dinklage last week where people seemed genuinely quite warm and excited. This seemed just like, hey, great job, dude, kind of thing. So I wonder if there's a there.
Okay.
Also, Al Sharpton, come on, man. What do you got going on? You can't stay and wave goodnight at the end of the night? Come on, man. Come on. Jason Sudeikis gets a pass. He was in a pre-tape. It probably was shot in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
exactly. But Sharpton, come on. Show up.
Okay, let's answer a couple questions. Mike Bloom wants to know, is Henry VIII the worst non-Trump sketch of the season so far?
It's up there. It is really
worst.
Well, I would say the worst pre-update sketch, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that I could say another. You know, I'm sure there are absolutely others equally as bad without me looking. But nothing comes to mind. That it was absolutely up there as one of the worst pre-update sketches in a long time.
Okay. Eric also wants to know, was this the first Survivor sketch ever, or were there some others in the early days? Rich, do you recall another Survivor SNL sketch?
I feel like there had to be.
I don't believe they've ever done it. Well, you know, the first Survivor was really a phenomenon, but that was a summertime phenomenon when SNL is in its off season. And it had certainly cooled by the time that the show came back in 2000. Which was also, you know, an election year, a lot of stuff going on. I do recall that Dana Carvey played Rudy Bosch in a sketch one time.
Wow.
When he was hosting.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But no, that I don't think they've ever done it. Mad TV, he did a Survivor sketch with Jeff Probst in it, which people link to a lot. But I believe that was the first Survivor SNL sketch. Mm-hmm. All right, Rich. Next week, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
She's a pro. She's technically an alumni, although she's not bringing any characters. It's not like we're going to see, like, you know, we're going to have Brad Hall or Gary Kroger show up, with her or Jim Belushi or anything like that. But that said, consummate, you know, comedic actress, will probably do quite well. Would love, you know, I'm hoping we get to see Larry David as Bernie Sanders, given how close the two of them are. So hopefully, I think it's going to be a nice round out to April, which we'll see. And then we'll see what May looks like, whether we're either going to take 1 week off or 2 weeks off before we get to which I think we can assume will be our final three.
Okay. So any picks, any takes on who we're going to see host the show in May?
I mean, it's weird. It's my perennial time to say, you know, where's Jon Hamm?
We didn't see Jon Hamm all these years with Mad Men.
I know. No, we haven't seen him in ages, and I just don't understand it. I don't know why he hasn't been back in so long. He's so good. So I think maybe we will see Sudeikis. I could see Sudeikis closing out the season, because I feel like it's sort of time for him to come back. And I think he's shown up. You know, we can see that he's clearly friend of show again, or not that he wasn't, but he was obviously not around for a long time. So that would be very exciting to me to see him come back.
Okay. We'll see what happens. I'm trying to take a look at May movie openings in terms of what's coming up, but we'll see. We'll see. Okay, so we should maybe start to hear some whispers in the next couple of weeks. All right, so that's going to do it for us here. We'll have a Julia Louis-Dreyfus podcast next week. You can make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to Post Show Recaps. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes or for our SNL feed, postshowrecaps.com/SNL. iTunes. Rich, anything else?
Nope. For our friends in the LA area, I'll be performing at a Moth Grand Slam telling a story on April 25th.
Wow.
So you can always check that out. I'll send that out on Twitter and Facebook tomorrow. I'm excited to do that. So that'll be fun.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Looking forward to reading more of your comments on postshowrecaps.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.